When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
Hey, it's me, Jersey, and it's time for your Thunder Punch Daily, the show I record not so daily, sharing a few thoughts on the mind of a cartoonist, and recording in the car again, because as I have been noticing lately, that's the only time I can actually get time to record, is when I'm either driving or waiting in my car. What am I thinking about today? Well, this has kind of been a topic that is not, it's not terribly timely for me, it's just something that's been going on in the background a lot. Had an interesting conversation with my buddy Hoover today about cartoons, which is virtually all he and I talk about whenever we talk. And I was expressing a lot of excitement over the upcoming release of the Challenge of the GoBots cartoon series, which is supposed to come out from the Warner Archives series. It's some kind of manufactured on-demand DVD project that they're doing, and it's supposedly in May they're coming out with this new cartoon, or this new set of the GoBots cartoon, which was something I didn't think was going to happen. I really honestly thought I was never going to see these cartoons again because of the way stupid copyright rights holding happens, the way it works here in the United States with so many different cooks in the kitchen all arguing over who gets the money. But it's coming out, and I'm very excited about it. So as I was talking to Hoover about it, he told me he was expressing surprise that I would be so excited about this because, after all, GoBots, for anybody who wasn't there in the early 80s or doesn't remember, GoBots was considered by many young people sort of the cheapo B brand, the Brand X sort of version of the Transformers. And as everybody knows, I'm a big, big Transformers fan. But And as a kid, yes, I was one of those kids. I didn't really want any GoBots. I wanted Transformers. But I still watched the cartoon. And I'll take my giant robots shooting lasers out of their hands any way I can get them. But there's more to it than that. I've noticed in the last 5 years, especially, that I've developed more of a taste for cartoons that are aimed even younger and younger. Some of you have heard me talk about the My Little Pony cartoon. And which I think is excellent. I think it's a fantastic show. It's super, super well written. But this is going to lead into the broader topic of today. When I say super well written, it means different things to different people. I also really enjoy the Teddy Ruxpin cartoon, which I reintroduced myself to recently thanks to Netflix. The Smurfs cartoon. DuckTales. And tastes notwithstanding. Okay, let's put tastes aside, because taste is important. We're all going to like different things for different reasons. But there's something that sticks in my craw, and I'm going to get a little mad today. This is going to be a little bit of a rant from me, because when I say well written, I just mean well written for the intended audience. I was at a party not long ago where I was introduced to, it was a party for grown-ups, okay? Like, not the kind of grown-up I am, but the kind of grown-ups that stop watching cartoons and don't remember these so much. And I was introduced to some of the other adults there as an 80s cartoon maven. Like, somebody who, they said something like, ask him anything about 80s cartoons and he can tell you the answer. Which, I don't know, is that a flattering thing or not? I'm not sure. But there it was. And so when people heard this, a young man came up to me and said, you know, I watched the Voltron cartoon not long ago. And I said, oh, yeah? And he said, yeah. And he gave me this kind of weird smile that I couldn't quite put my finger on what exactly it meant. And he said, it doesn't really hold up. And I tried to explain to him as patiently as I could, well, there's holding up and holding up. It all depends on what you're expecting when you go and watch these things. I'm not going to make an excuse for sloppy writing or for bad writing, but something that happens a lot with adults who forget about this stuff, you know, stop watching it, stop reading comics aimed at young people, and they don't have to like them. Let me stop real quick and throw in this disclaimer. I'm not suggesting for a second that people should watch Voltron and like it, or that people should watch The Smurfs and like it. Again, taste notwithstanding. But to accuse it of being poorly written because it's aimed at kids kind of misses the point, in my opinion. My answer to that would be, when you watch Sesame Street, do you complain that it's not an epic of drama and adventure and deep characterization. For some reason, when people go back and watch Sesame Street, they accept the fact that this show was aimed at kids, and they judge it accordingly. Yes, there was humor in there that was kind of fired over the heads of the children, and we can chuckle at it because we get the joke, you know, like Monster Peace Theater with Alistair Cookie, which was a Beat the Time was another game show they ran on Sesame Street, which was a reference to Beat the Clock, an old 1950s game show. Yeah, there's stuff like that in there, but that's really kind of a minor point. What makes Sesame Street enduring, and what makes the Muppets enduring, is an essential charm about them that both the young and young at heart can enjoy. But, and I think that this is true of stories written for young people. Good stories written for young people, yes, it will transcend to a degree, but there's always going to be those adults who just don't get it because it's, I think of the quote from T.H. White, the guy who wrote The Sword and the Stone. He wrote another follow-up book called The Book of Merlin, where Merlin says something to the effect of, adults have comforted themselves for their degradation by pretending that children are childish. And I think about that a lot when I hear people say, like, oh, well, such and such cartoon doesn't hold up. You know, if you really look at it, if you look at it through that lens of looking at Voltron, let's take that Voltron example. And this is what I said to that guy at that party was, it doesn't hold up if you try to look at it as a piece of modern literature or award-winning television, but look at it from the standpoint of an 8-year-old. Listen to that opening sequence when they have conflicting language in there, but it's all soaring and mythological sounding, you know? A galaxy alliance was formed. Together with the good planets of the solar system, they maintained peace throughout the galaxy. It's a good planets of the solar system maintaining peace throughout a galaxy? But you called it a galaxy alliance, so that would mean that it'd be inter-system as well as interplanetary, right? But don't think about it too logically. This is stuff that's written for children. Look at stuff that's written from the mindset of a child. You know, some of my students come up with characters with names like Top Hat Chicken Lord. And it just works because they're not trying to create this kind of systematized logic to it. They're not trying to write something that's going to win them a Golden Globe Award or anything like that. They're just writing something that entertains them, something that's fun, something that's imaginative. And imagination comes before logic in a lot of the best stuff, I think. But yes, logic needs to be there. Story logic needs to be there, even in stuff that's aimed at young people. But I think you have a little bit more flexibility there. And I think the best stories, like I was just talking to Hoover about this on the phone today, was that one of the reasons I love 80s cartoons so much, aside from the nostalgia factor, was it seemed like it was a time when virtually any concept could fly. I defy anybody to compare the cartoons that were coming out in the 80s to cartoons that are on TV today and tell me that there wasn't more variety. There was Turbo Teen, where it was about a boy who, when you splashed water on him, he turned into a car, a sports car. Rubik's the Amazing Cube, where they took a simple toy that was popular at the time, the Rubik's Cube, and turned it into this weird alien genie thing that could grant wishes and perform magic, but his magic would be canceled if the cube got messed up. You had a Pac-Man cartoon, where they took a video game, Pac-Man, and tried to create an adventure story out of it. Pole Position, which I recently just watched on Hulu.com, if you can watch it. I think it's only available in North America, unfortunately. Or they took a Namco video game? I think it was a Namco game, where it was just a race car game, and they turned it into a story about a brother and sister who are stunt drivers who perform various feats of derring do in cars on a racetrack, but in their off hours, their uncle, who runs a great big giant James Bond spy network, can call on them to solve international problems. And they have these little boxes with computer faces on them that they install in their cars to give the cars personalities, and the cars can assist them on certain missions. Plastic Man, Mr. T, the cartoon. It wasn't Mr. T and the T-Force, if you want to get specific about it. That was the comic series, But anyway, the list goes on. It just seemed like any kind of wild combination, the wacky combination of ideas, as long as you could string together some kind of story, it could be on television. And one of the things that I think back fondly on was those Saturday mornings where I could flip. I could channel surf in the morning on Saturday and be introduced to a whole fleet of different crazy concepts. And do these things hold up if you compare them to The King's Speech? Of course not. But they weren't meant to. Fiction for young people shouldn't be the King's Speech. It would be boring to children. It should have that kind of loud vibrancy with sort of an attention to logic, but not too deep of an attention to logic. It should have kind of a sporadic attention to logic, I think. So it's another way of showing... It's another way where adults demonstrate to me whether or not they've hung on to that muse of their youth or not. And it's something that I think we can rediscover as well. It's something that I think is a skill that can be learned, is learning how to think like a child again. I mean, after all, isn't that something Picasso said? Is that he spent his whole life learning how to draw like a child? Something like that. I know I'm paraphrasing largely, if not completely misquoting, but it was something to that effect. And so I think you can learn to write like a child and think like a child again. And I think if you can put your mind into that, this is one of the reasons, I mean, as somebody who wants to write for children, it's both a pleasure and also research for me to watch these old shows, because it's fun to get into that mindset and try to think that way in order to write these kind of stories for myself. And to think that kind of, when I say anything goes, that's kind of limiting. Because when you say anything goes, that gives you too many choices. But there's a certain kind of anything goes that works with kids' stuff. Anything that's fun goes. Anything that's neat goes. And that's still not specific enough. It's still too vague. But I'm driving in a general direction towards what I'm talking about. I had another conversation. And this is why this is kind of sticking in my craw. I had another conversation where I was did a school visit. And did a presentation for a bunch of second graders, and it was wildly successful. I think there was 500 kids over the course of the day that I taught. And some of the school teachers came up to me, some of the first and second grade teachers, who were my age. And so they were remarking to me how my work, when I was showing the examples to the kids, they were saying how my work reminded them of some of the stuff they grew up on. And they mentioned He-Man and the Masters of the Universe and Super Friends and whatnot. Gosh, Super Friends is a great cartoon to go back to, the Hanna-Barbera series. Go back to Challenge of the Super Friends and even the 1977, I think, Super Friends Hour. Really wild, nonsensical stories in there, but really fun. But anyway, that was sort of a sideline note. You can get these from Netflix, by the way, or I'm sure you can find them on YouTube as well. But anyway, he comes up to me and he did the same thing where he said, oh, I loved He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, but I hated Orko. Oh, I hate Orko so much. Oh, Thundercats. I hate Snarf. I hated Spike in the Transformers. Always picking on the vehicle character who is there for very young children to identify with. Again, forgetting the whole symbol system. Snarf and Orko and Spike and in the later iterations of Transformers, Sari, Daniel... trying to think of some other ones. Herbie the Robot from the 1970s Fantastic Four cartoon. These are characters that get just ganged up on by people as they grow older, and I think they get beaten on because these adults are, I think of that quote from T.H. White again, is that they are comforting themselves from their degradation by pretending that children are childish. Oh, this character is silly. This character is... flippant, and whenever he shows up, there's always going to be some kind of predictable catastrophe that happens. Yeah, that's the point. It's a kid's show. And if you can't watch it from the mindset of a child, of course it's going to fall short. But that's not a fight that I can go into every time. So unfortunately, when I'm amongst adults, I have to smile and nod and say, well, you know, I guess it's just a matter of taste. But I also don't think it's just a matter of taste. I think it's also something that as writers, as storytellers, we can look at with a cool analytical eye, not look at it as entertainment, and look at, is it good? Is it well done for its intended audience? So going back to My Little Pony, when I say it's good, is it Tolstoy? Is it... Dickens? No, of course it's not. It's a 20-something minute show. And there's 5 main characters, and then they also introduce many more characters throughout the different stories. Of course they're not going to fit in anything of any kind of layered complexity and sophistication, and there's not going to be any kind of reference to socio-political issues. It's not going to be about referendums going on in Africa or anything like that. Of course not. It's something that's simple, and it has a simple idea. And is it elegantly done? Is it tightly written so that all the ideas reflect on the main point of the story? Does it succeed in not wandering around and losing its point or its essential theme? Then it's well written. Do the characters come across clearly in the dialogue without having to explain, oh, you're the character who feels this way in the dialogue? Going back to like 1960s Gardner Fox Justice League comics, like, hello, Flash, who happens to run really fast and live in Central City. How are you today? Well, Green Lantern, who happens to be the guardian of the Earth from the planet Oa and whatnot, you know. As long as you don't, it is the dialogue written in a way that we get a sense of these characters without them having to do too much exposition, then it's tightly written. Then it's well written. It's harder to write that stuff than people give credit for. And I'm not here to defend that kind of writing. I'm just here to say that that writing is really, really neat, and I love it a lot, and it becomes tiresome to me sometimes when people say it doesn't hold up. Hold up compared to what? Does the Muppets Take Manhattan not hold up? You know? What are you comparing this to? What are your expectations when you sit down to watch it? When you hear silly language or a bizarre concept in a show aimed at the people with the imaginations of 8-year-olds, you're gonna complain that it's somehow silly or nonsensical? When was the last time you talked to a little kid? I mean, really talked to a little kid and listened to the ideas that they have. So that's another thing altogether. But anyway, rant over. I feel purged. Well, not really. I'm still angry about it. But that's the price we pay for being interested in the things that we're interested in. It means that we don't quite fit in with the rest of the world. But at the very least, let me say this. Speaking to those of you out there who are listening who deeply love these shows and these kinds of ideas and these kinds of stories the way I do, I'm right there with you. So okay, at least we're brothers in arms and brothers and sisters in arms in that respect. So who am I? I'm Jersey Droz, jdroz.com, Jersey on the Twitters. Thank you very much for supporting us in this project. We could not do it without you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to exercise demons like I did today. And I'll be back soon to exercise more demons with another Thunder Punch Daily. And until then, remember everybody.
In today's story, Orko is faced with a very difficult decision. You know, when we're young, most of our decisions are made for us. But as we get older, well, we want to make more and more of them for ourselves, and that's the way it ought to be. But sometimes we have a real tough one, a real problem. And when that happens, it's a good idea to talk it over with someone else. Someone who really cares about you, like your mother or father, or maybe your best friend. Talking a problem out with someone else can be a great help.